This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by the American Family Insurance Championship in Madison. Wisconsin's stop on the PGA Tour's champions provided a lot of excitement in its return to the schedule in 2021, and plans are underway for the 2022 AmFam Championship. So mark your calendars for June 10th through the 12th at University Ridge Golf Course in Madison, with a field sure to include tournament host Steve Stricker and two-time defending champion Jerry Kelly, both from Madison. This great event has raised more than $10.2 million for local charities since its debut in 2016. Be sure to check the tournament's website at amfamchampionship.com for ticket information for the 2022 AmFam Championship. And we welcome you into Talking.Golf, Rob Hernandez, joined by Gary D'Amato. Gary, let's get right to it. It is the AmFam Report, powered by the AmFam Championship. If you missed the AmFam Championship a couple weeks ago at University Ridge, we've got a similar version of it playing out at Firestone Country Club in Akron, Ohio. It's the third of the five PGA Tour Champions majors, if I've counted that correctly, because we've got the U.S. Senior Open coming up, then the British Senior. Steve Stricker, midway through the second round of the Bridgestone Senior Player Championship, even par for the day, 7-under for the tournament. He still has a 4-shot lead.
Yeah, I'm looking at the scores too, Rebs. Yeah, Steve has 9 consecutive pars to start his round. So it's kind of like a U.S. Open round at a Senior Players Championship. All the leaders on the first page to the leaderboard anyway, looks like everyone's kind of spinning their wheels. Marco Dawson's a couple under. Ernie Els has made the biggest move. He's 4-under on the day and 2-under for the tournament, but still 5 shots behind Stricker, who's holding serve with a bunch of pars. So pretty interesting. Jerry Kelly just made a bogey, I think, and is back down to even par, and he's 7 shots off the pace.
And of course, Steve and Jerry playing together this week at Firestone. It's a great old course. These guys love the old courses that they get a chance to play. I think they've got the TPC at Sugarloaf. They've got Warwick Hills over in near Detroit, Michigan on the schedule. But Firestone's extra special, isn't it, Gary?
It really is. Yeah, I've been there once, covered a tournament there years ago. And it was a tournament that Greg Norman won, which tells you how long ago it was that I was at Firestone. But it's a great course. I don't know if it's a U.S. Open type course. I don't know if it could hold an open, but it can hold, I think, just about anything up to that, including a senior major championship here this week. So yeah, really good golf course.
And in looking at the transcript from yesterday's interview with Steve after his round, a lot of tinkering on his putting game. He went back to the bigger grip. I think we all have, the thicker grip on our putters these days to try to help, with that putting tempo, which is so precise, but just a lot of other things in terms of how he's gripping it. It almost sounded to me like he's gone to the claw grip, but the wrist lock grip. And he, for a guy that's been such a good putter for so many years, it seemed like a lot of changes all at once.
I can't imagine seeing Steve Stricker using the arm lock. I mean, it would not look right, right? I mean, he's been a classic. He's had the classic putting stroke and style, you know, for his entire career. And I know, you know, he's been struggling with his putter, or at least in his mind, he has been for a couple months now. So I'm sure he's at the point where he's, you know, willing to try anything to try to putt a little better, which he certainly did in the first round yesterday. But I know he's experimented with some things and he hasn't brought them onto the course. But the day I see Steve Stricker on, you know, in a tournament using an arm lock, that's kind of the day that hell freezes over, I think. I never would imagine that.
I was going to give him, I would cool hell to 32 degrees if he ever went to the long putter, Gary. The long putter to me, I'm calling it quits. I'm walking out the building. That would be a sign that Steve has reached a certain age where we all get there, but I just can't ever see Steve Stricker struggling that badly where he would go to a long putter. But so I'll give him the arm lock grip. I won't give him the long putter though. So he better stop right there.
Yeah, that should be the end. Yeah, if he does go to arm lock, all right, I'll close my eyes when he cuts. But yeah, but you're right. But the long cutter, no, that does not fit Mr. Stricker at all.
No. Also, in this, as we talked about the AmFam Championship, the AmFam report here on Talking.Golf, Skip Kendall, very quickly, Gary, I don't know if you saw it, came through one of my Google News alerts, but they had a qualifier at the start of the week at Firestone for the British Senior Open, and Skip got through with a 68. And so he's going to be not only playing in the U.S. Senior Open next week down in Omaha, but also then the Senior British Open coming up in a few weeks right after the British Open. So, and a 68 at Firestone from Skip Kendall, he told us he was playing well. That kind of validates it. It'll be fun to watch him kind of, you know, maybe lurking in the background at a couple more majors coming up. He's not in the field this week, though, for the senior players.
Yeah, you know, when we saw him, Rob, at the AmFam, he talked about how his game had improved. Really couldn't put a finger on why, except that he had, you know, been away from the game competitively, maybe refreshed and recharged it a little bit. And also, he's doing quite a bit of coaching and teaching, and maybe by osmosis, you know, some of the things he's working on with his talented students are sort of, he's remembering, oh yeah, this is how you do it kind of thing. You know, I covered two Open Championships, two British Opens in my life, Rob, and one of them was the one that Skip led for 36 holes at Royal, I think it was Royal Troon, yeah, way back in the day. That was fun. I think he finished maybe top 15 or top 20 in that British Open. So yeah, it'll be, it's really great that he gets to go back there as a senior now and playing in the Senior British.
Yeah. So a lot to look forward to, AmFam wise and others, some of the guys that we saw at University Ridge. And, again, AmFamChampionship.com, is your place to look for ticket updates as we look forward to 2022. And, you know, we've got I'm sure the grant announcement will be coming up in December. And so like all big tournaments, Gary, that it's a year round process, and they've been kind enough to be our Talking.Golf sponsor here for the last couple months, and we appreciate their support. And it really was a fun AmFam, kind of kicked off our month of coverage here on Wisconsin.Golf with me back in Wisconsin and the two of us being able to tag team on a couple of events. And I'm looking forward to 2022.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, you know, we've got a long way to go this summer, Rob, before our competitive season is over with. I know you've been busy at a lot of junior stuff. You know, I saw you at the Women's State Open. And now, you know, I cover the match play. You covered a junior event. And we've got the Ray Fisher coming up this weekend. So certainly no lack of stuff to cover, that's for sure.
So what Gary D'Amato is trying to tell you folks, that it's time for What's Up, powered by @wis.golf on Instagram. That's right. Wisconsin.golf's presence on Instagram growing with the help of our newest team member, Megan Augustine. Give us a follow on Instagram @wis.golf. And Gary D'Amato, we had Megan going round the clock here the last couple of days between the match play. I was out at Hawks Landing Monday and Tuesday. You were there and following Wednesday and Thursday. And then with the junior stuff, I tell you, the junior stuff, they've got some great interns this year at the WPGA. And it's fun because they're all about this, you know, just a little bit out of, you know, older than the kids playing in the tournament. And some of these kids would come off the green and they'd be taking a picture of them signing their scorecard. What's your Instagram account or your Instagram handle? And so that is a whole new way of communicating. So we are, Gary and I are very thankful Megan has come aboard, because I don't think I'm decent with the Twitter, Gary, but when we get to the Instagram, it's kind of outside of my area of expertise, but we've got a lot of stuff there. So when you want to find out what's up, go right to our Instagram @wis.golf. And to your point, Gary, the week started with the state match play out at Hawks Landing. I thought it was a great match play course. It's kind of funny because the last time I covered the state match play, it was at Blackhawk Country Club. Mike Bilowski won it. And, you know, you had guys attacking the short par fours, and they were at the mercy of longer holes and the wind out at Hawks Landing. I thought it was a great course for the event this week.
Yeah, it's the first time I've ever been there, Rob. I'd never seen the course, and I thought it was a tremendous golf course. You know, a lot of elevation change, a lot of good variety in the holes. And I covered the championship match yesterday, and saw some great golf between Garrett Jones and Matt Tolan. Those guys really went at it. You know, they were very evenly matched. The match went to 21 holes before Garrett Jones hit a fantastic shot, an 8-iron from 171 yards that almost went in and finished a couple of feet behind the hole for a conceded birdie to win the match. But up until that point, it had gone back and forth. Garrett never trailed, but he never led by more than, you know, two up in the match. And Matt put up a great fight. It was really a fun match to watch.
And while you were doing that, I was maybe about a couple hours behind you because we had a two-hour rain delay at Brown Deer Park for the Wisconsin PGA Junior Championship. And there, Bryson Mercier of Powers, Michigan, outlasts Ty Kretz of Marinette by one shot to win the 36-hole event. And it was much the same stuff. Number 16 at Brown Deer Park there in the back nine. Kretz hits one in there to about 6-7 feet, and then Mercier hits one into about 3 or 4, and they both make birdie. So Kretz for about 30 seconds had a share of the lead, and they had been going back and forth most of the day, along with you know, a couple other guys, Mason Schmidtke out of Sheboygan and Braden Resnick out of Rice Lake were right there. You know, one shot separated the four. They were the final four in the last group, and then Mercier made some clutch par putts on 17 and 18 was kind of a clutch one because he thought the putt was going in, and it kind of ran through. Again, the tournaments that we've covered this month, Gary, the courses have been in just great condition, and it's been, I know the wind at Hawks Landing really caused havoc with the guys in the match play, you know, trying not only to get the ball to get into the, you know, to get to greens in regulation, but even putting on the surfaces. And it was kind of the same way yesterday at Brown Deer, but Bryson Mercier was able to par 18, and he wins by one. He gets the national berth, and now he and Ty Kretz are going to go. Ty is already committed to South Dakota State University, and next week Bryson is going to go on a campus visit at South Dakota State with Ty and just see what's out there. And I know that UW Green Bay very interested in Bryson Mercier after not being able to they were the runner-up in the Ty Kretz sweepstakes this year. And then I think he's got a couple of opportunities also from schools in Michigan. So a fun week at the WPGA Junior. But, Gary, we got rain. Did you get delayed much at all?
We did, Rob. We had about an hour delay because of lightning in the area. And it was right before – it was between the semifinals and the finals. So – it wasn't like they had to call guys off the course. We just had to wait to go out and play the championship match and the third place match. And then after that, you know, the lightning was gone, but it drizzled off and on, you know, for quite a bit of the, you know, parts of the match there. But yeah, it was a really good match between that. And I want to get back to Bryson Mercier for 1 second, Rob, because I haven't seen him play yet. I know you've seen him play a couple times now, but in our picture, in the photo that we ran, I don't know if you took that photo of the handshake. Was that yours?
Yes.
Yeah. Bryson looks to be not a very big guy. What are the strengths to his game?
And you're right. I hope Bryson's not listening, because I don't want to butcher this. He's grown a little bit. He's strong. The kid's strong. But I believe he told me last year he was either 5'3 or 5'4. And wow. And that is a consideration. It's why, you know, the schools recruiting him, you know, aren't, you know, high majors, because, you know, let's face it, we live in a Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau world, and Bryson Mercier is more of a Skip Kendall build, but I was really impressed, because I was talking to a couple people about that yesterday, and, you know, I mean, at some point, you know, everyone around Bryson has kind of shot up and gotten bigger, stronger. And he's the same guy he was when I first met him last year when he won the 36-hole event in a playoff over Ty Kretz over at Black Wolf Run a year ago, the first of the two players tour events they have every year. And but I was so impressed with his short game. I mean, when he needed to stick a wedge to within makeable distance for par after maybe getting offline, he did it. And I think I counted 4 or 5 really clutch par putts, including a legit seven footer on 17 after he blew one by. He thought the putt was uphill. All of a sudden it's going downhill and he's going, "Oh, wait a second here." And in that situation, that was not fun, but Yeah, so he, not a big kid at all, but boy, has a wonderful touch around the greens. And one other thing I wanted to bring up too, Gary, maybe you saw it at the match play. The world of TrackMan has really created a lot of people chasing speed off the tee with their how hard and how fast they swing the driver. And throughout the back nine, you look at the scorecard, you'd think, oh, just a ho-hum, even par, one under round for some of these kids. They were playing out of the trees nonstop. I mean, they're trying to get that 400, you know, that 350-yard drive so they can, you know, knock one at 2 feet and have a kick and birdie. And they do it once every three or four holes. But, boy, you know, I can't imagine playing out of the trees as much as some of these kids in the situations they play out of. And I just think I've seen the attack mode go to a whole new level here in especially men's amateur golf.
Yeah, the template is definitely out there on the PGA Tour, right? All the good young players follow the trend and what's going on the big tours. And certainly, you know, these kids who are 12, 13, 14, 15 are watching Bryson, Dustin Johnson, and Brooks Koepka and looking at the PGA Tour driving distance and seeing there's, I don't know, 60 guys averaging more than 300 yards per drive, per measured drive this year. So, you know, in their mind, back of their minds, they're thinking, if I want to go far in this game, I've got to hit it out there. I've got to hit a 320. And so they're chasing distance. For some, obviously, it's paying off. And for others, it's a little bit of a detriment because Bryson, it's different playing out of the trees when you're Bryson DeChambeau versus a 16-year-old kid who doesn't have that strength yet, you know, to be able to do it. So, really interesting how those guys on the tour have changed the way young kids, you know, attack a golf course.
Absolutely. And that kind of segues into what's next. What's next brought to you by our Twitter handle for all golf results at wis.golflive. At wis.golflive is where you can go to find all the results posted to wisconsin.golf as they go live to the site. That's at wis.golflive. And volume's down, but the quality of the tournaments are up. And what's next, Gary, is the Ray Fisher State Amateur Tournament currently going on at Janesville Riverside Golf Course. By far the most fun I have refreshing a computer screen ever is the Ray Fisher. Every time I refresh the screen this morning, as first round play is nearing the halfway point, it's a different leader. And right now, it's Nate Thompson out of Greendale, the former Marquette and University of Toledo golfer from Greendale. He's at 666 tied with Badger golfer Cameron Huss out of Kenosha. They're both in the clubhouse. UW Green Bay golfer Max Pascher out of Mequon is currently through 15 holes, also at 6 under. And Gary, they always say the Ray Fisher is where kids learn to go low. And Al Dang out of Madison played in the state high school tournament last week for Madison Edgewood, the state champion in Division II. And was their second top golfer there. Also played the last couple days down at Brown Deer Park and Dretzka Park in the WPGA Junior. He shoots a 5-under par 67. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's a career low round, and he's currently tied for fourth place in the clubhouse with Jacob Beckman, the Badger recruit out of Middleton, and Ethan Wilkins out of Sussex, who plays down at Illinois Wesleyan. He is on the course through 14 holes at 5-under par, along with Matthew Robb out of Heartland. He plays up at the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota, and saw Matthew at the state match play earlier this week. It is, Gary D., the longest week of golf in Wisconsin, and it continues here with the Ray Fisher through the weekend.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite tournaments to cover, Rob. I know I've been there a number of Sundays over the years. I've seen most of them, I think, as have you. Going back, you know, 20 some years. It's a fun tournament because the leaders make a lot of birdies. It's usually a real shootout. Guys get to, you know, 15, 16, 18, 20 under par. And that's fun to cover when you see guys at this level, you know, shooting those kind of scores. And I'm sure they have a blast too, going down to Janesville Riverside and attacking that golf course. I've called the scores up, and I think something's wrong with the scores here, Rob, because I see Ethan Wilkins of Sussex at 10 under through 16. But when I look at his scorecard, seeing the thing?
Yeah, I just refreshed.
Holy cow. Yeah. He just made an eagle two on 16.
Yeah, I just saw that there. So I don't know. I will have to check into that. I know that there have been some issues with live scoring. It was funny to see at the state match play, Jeff Perkle from the WSGA came out to the 6-tee out at Hawks Landing one day, Monday or Tuesday, to get Nick Nelson to remember to put the scores in each hole because they were about two or three holes behind. And so sometimes when you get in the zone, Gary, you forget to do the live scoring. But clearly, if this is the true, Ethan Wilkins, birdie, 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 eagle, 13, 14, 15, and 16, and some birdieable par fours coming in at Janesville Riverside. But Gary, they're all birdieable down there at Riverside.
Yeah. It's as I said just a minute ago, it is fun to watch those guys attack that course. But, you know, most of them hit drivers on a lot of holes and just have wedges into those greens. And so, you know, their ability to hit it close and then make those 6, 8, and 10 footers. That's why you see the low scores there. But yeah, I just 10 under with two holes to go. I mean, my goodness, that is quite a score. I don't know a lot about Ethan. I don't know if you do, Rob, but it looks like he's going to be a factor here.
Well, Ethan plays on one of the most competitive Division III programs in the country at Illinois Wesleyan. They were the national champs a couple years ago. And I believe successfully defended this spring in the NCAA Division III championships. Ethan was the number 5 golfer on the team and managed to be the second lowest scorer on his team. So your classic number 5 golfer where, you know, he outkicks his coverage and takes a lot of the pressure off his teammates. So Ethan Wilkins, definitely a name to be looking for. And played his high school golf at Lake Country Lutheran in Heartland and determined to play at the highest level he could at the Division III level. And went to Illinois Wesleyan and really was at the they played a little bit early in the fall and despite COVID and then played most of their schedule this spring, and he was not in the 5-man roster to start the spring, but he was front and center by the end. And now it would appear, based on live scoring from Janesville Riverside, that he is now at 10 under par and with a 2-shot lead over Matthew Robb at St. Thomas, with the same story, only Matthew was in the St. Thomas lineup, fell out, and has been working hard to get back in as St. Thomas transitions to from Division III to Division I coming up here this fall. So a lot to look forward to here at the Ray Fisher tournament. And before we stop talking about the Ray Fisher, Gary, you were mentioning there's a pretty marquee pairing this afternoon down at Janesville Riverside that includes two of your good friends, Garrett Jones, who you saw win the state match play, and then another guy that might be familiar to not only golf fans, but football fans listening to the podcast.
Yeah, Tony Romo playing in the Fisher again. He's played in it a number of times and has had some good results. He's got a 2 or 3 top 10 finishes. He's contended, you know, been on the fringe of contention a couple times on Sunday afternoon. And he's playing with Bob Gregorski, Tom Halla, the Landing Cannon, and Garrett Jones, who just won his second match play title yesterday. That is a there's a lot of fireworks, potential fireworks in that foursome. That'd be cool to walk along and watch those guys.
And so that's what's next, the Ray Fisher tournament and the 36 hole finale on Sunday will conclude that. Gary, we should tell our listeners if there sounds like there's fatigue in our voices, it's because we've already had a long stretch, 7 or 8 days to finish the coverage month here. And then on Monday, I'll be out at Balance and Believe Invitational at Blackhawk Country Club, which is always a great event. Derek Schnarr gets a lot of the mini tour guys to come back. And for the junior golfers, they go from either match play, WPGA Junior Championship to the Ray Fisher. And then Monday and Tuesday, it's the Dells Junior Golf Championship up at Wild Rock and Trapper's Turn. Feels like I was just there for the state high school tournament. And then the 4th of July weekend almost forces a break. I love that we have that right in the middle of everything.
Yeah, and we've been talking about all these great young players, Rob, and I'm kind of scrolling through the Ray Fisher scores, and I see tied for 15th, Jim Rollefson. Raleigh's got to be, I think he's got to be 72 or 73 years old, and he's 2 under.
Are you kidding me?
It's great to see Raleigh on the leaderboard at the Ray Fisher. Don't know. Hopefully he can stay up there. But yeah, guys like Jim Doing and Raleigh and, you know, and the mid-am certainly can be very, very competitive in this tournament.
I remember seeing Raleigh at the Ray Fisher last year and taking a picture of him, and he said, oh, you don't need a picture of me. I won't be anywhere near the lead. And he's got that short little backswing now, and he's one of these guys that has, you know, played so much competitive golf through the years here in Wisconsin that, you know, he just seems to get better with age. So, again, it's an equal opportunity tournament down there at Riverside, and that is what's next. Gary, we wrap up our Talking Dot Golf podcast this week with a look at the Ryder Cup report. The Ryder Cup report powered by Kohler Golf. Got to hang out with Ed Elsner yesterday at Brown Deer Park. He was starting on hole number one, the youngsters off the first tee. And I kind of threw him a curveball. I said that I'd be back in August for the state amateur, and then July for the state amateur and September for the state open. He goes, wait a second, state open September? No, we can't have that in September. And I said, no, that was my bad. It's August. And because we've got that darn Ryder Cup in September, and everybody at Kohler Golf looking forward to that. Top six on the U.S. standings, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka, Xander Schauffele. And your thoughts on where we stand right now coming out of the U.S. Open, and with, you know, this lineup and what we've seen from these people. You know, even Brooks Koepka, we talked about, you know, potential for injury and not being at 100%. He's played at 110%, I think, this year, Gary, and I like the way this team is shaping up.
Yeah, so do I, Rob. You know, the point standings haven't changed much in the last few weeks. And now we've got a stretch of golf coming up where guys who want to make the team are going to have to really play their butt off to get on this team. You know, probably, I'm going to say, in about 4 or 5 weeks after the conclusion of the British Open, Rob, it's, you know, the teams, it's not going to be set, but it's going to be, you're going to have a good idea who at least the qualifiers are going to be on the points. The top two or three are virtually on the team already. But those, you know, six, seven, eight, nine spots are still up for grabs. And then, of course, Steve Stricker gets his six captain's pick. So there's going to be some jockeying, but if you want to be on that team, you know, the next month or 5 weeks, I think, is the time to play your best golf to get on that team or get Mr. Stricker's attention for a captain's pick.
And over on the European side, Gary, we haven't had a chance to talk much about the U.S. Open on our podcast, but Jon Rahm and what he did at Torrey Pines sure was impressive. And I thought that, you know, after all the adversity he faced at the Memorial with the COVID positive, you know, he handled that beautifully, and he certainly handled himself. What was he, the first guy to finish birdie to win a U.S. Open?
Yes, on the last two holes. Yep, in the final round, he definitely was, and yeah, he played great. You know, I'm tempted to say that this could be the floodgates opening for John, and he could go on to win, you know, 4 or 5 majors in the next 6 or 7 years. But you know, I said that about Justin Thomas too, when after he won his PGA a few years back, and he has yet to claim major number two. We'll see. But John certainly, I mean, you know, Phil Mickelson predicted, you know, years ago that John was going to be the best player in the world. And he has risen to number one in the world now with his victory in the Open. So he's going to be formidable at Whistling Straits too. You know, people talk about how on paper the U.S. team is so much better than the European team. I'm not so sure I buy that. And even if they are on paper, you know, they've been favorites many times in recent Ryder Cups. And of course, Europe has done a pretty good job thrashing the U.S. team. So, yeah, Rahm is going to be a heart and soul, along with Rory McIlroy, of that team at Whistling Straits.
And I'm worried about the Seve factor. I mean, I think the world, yeah, at least on the European side, waiting for the next Seve to kind of, you know, complement the Great Britain players in that European team. And I feel that Jon Rahm has a lot of those same qualities, just a guy who's always, always there. And especially in a Ryder Cup, that's a hard nut to crack.
Yeah. Yeah. All the talent in the world, people were waiting for him to break through and win a major. Now he's done it. And he's going to be around for a long time. He's still a young man. And he's got that fire and that passion that we saw in Seve, who passed it down to Jose Maria Olfabo, who passed it down to Sergio. Those Spanish golfers, man, they come to the course at big events, and they are fired up and ready to play.
And we're in the middle or the end of June, and I saw a tweet today that said that Ian Poulter, yes, indeed, Ian Poulter, 68-66 at the Travelers. So he's a factor. It's going to be a wild ride here the next few months leading up to the Ryder Cup, but it'll be fun for all of us to follow it. And we should we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the fact that you and I got to play the venue for the Junior Ryder Cup this week at Blue Mound Golf and Country Club, thanks to our colleague Mike Davis. And I tell you what, those kids are in for a treat. Blue Mound, it's impeccable.
That is such a great golf course. The fairway is like a carpet. The greens are, it's a Seth Rayner design. So people who are familiar with him as an architect will know that, you know, he was very imaginative and creative with his green complexes, even though back in the day when they built those courses, they had steam shovels and horse-drawn wagons, and that kind of thing. But those green complexes at Blue Mound are just so good. The greens are so fast. And Rob, we thought they were fast, but wait until those Junior Ryder Cup players get on them. They're going to be another foot or two faster, I think. And it's going to be fun to watch those kids play. And you'll get to do that. You'll get to cover the Junior Ryder Cup for us. So I'm looking forward to your coverage there.
And you and Mike handle those greens really well. I'm currently in putting rehab after the other day. So
arm lock, Rob, arm lock.
That's arm lock, there we go. Long putter, Gary, long putter.
Yeah.
Well, that takes us to the end of Talking.Golf. And Gary, appreciate the time. And we'll do this again next week.
All right, Rob, thank you.
For Gary D'Amato, I am Rob Hernandez. This has been Talking.Golf, sponsored by the American Family Insurance Championship in Madison. The AmFam Championship provided a lot of excitement in its return to the PGA Tour Champion schedule in 2021. Plans are underway for the 2022 AmFam Championship, so mark your calendars for June 10th through the 12th at University Ridge Golf Course in Madison, with a field sure to include tournament host Steve Stricker and two-time defending champion Jerry Kelly, both from Madison. This great event has raised more than $10.2 million for local charities since its debut in 2016, and they will add to that total with the grand announcement this December. Be sure to check out the tournament's website at amfamchampionship.com for information on that and ticket information for the 2022 AmFam Championship. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.